an unlikely sequel to an indie kaiju darling is given the green light to come out after Gareth Edwards' Big G debut. But with this first-time feature director, will he be able to live up to the original film, or is this series not deserving of the sequel treatment? Find out along with us as we take a look at Iraq and Monsters in Kaiju versus History Monsters Dark Continent.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your Jarhead, ready to make some monsters dead, Miles. And joining me is another tone-deaf war movie set in the Middle East, Patrick. Patrick, how you doing?
Miles, are we the baddies?
Right?
Wait a minute, I just look at the uniform. What, is our constant interference in Middle Eastern affairs somehow making us the baddies?
Well, here's the thing. So this, of course, we are talking about Monsters Dark Continent 2014. British science fiction film directed by Tom Green. No, not that one.
Yeah, by God, I wish it was that one. Every time I read that, I'm just like, no.
If the real Tom Green, yeah, I said it, the real Tom Green had done this movie, I think we would have had a masterpiece on our hands.
Oh, boy. Yeah, he's a British director who I think had not done like major studio films before this.
Boy, howdy, I can tell.
And I'm just guessing is also a British director.
Yeah, he had directed some episodes of Misfits, which is kind of like his, you know, the bigger stuff that he's done. Everything else is kind of smaller or some TV stuff or a little short film, because why not?
Yeah, he's done a lot of short films. I guess since then, well, before and since, but
yeah, I think that people probably saw this movie and said, maybe not this guy. I believe he also has a writing credit on this film, which is the double threat is actually a threat in this one.
Well, you know, that's how Gareth Edwards made the first Monsters. It was
I'm aware. I'm more talking. My sarcastic comment was more talking about the quality of this work than yes. anything else.
You know, Gareth Edwards was quadruple kind of threat for the first film, writing, directing, special effects, and in part cinematography, because he was out there actually with the camera filming his two main leads. Relatively much larger production for Monsters Dark Continent, a sequel, not really direct sequel, because none of the characters.
It basically takes place like 10 years after the first film. The monsters have moved on, I guess. That part's really unclear, but they made it sound like the monsters moved from Mexico to. They raised a lot of cities in the U.S. and made their way towards the Middle East.
Yeah, they don't really describe that too much. There is monster graffiti in Detroit. So it's like, did they get up here? Is that just like,
and I don't even know stylistic. If they ever specify where in the Middle East they actually go.
No, I don't believe so. You know, I say
they just assume they show you a bunch of sand and you're like, oh, yeah, that's the Middle East.
I wrote the Iraq in the description there, but this could be, you know, your Afghanistan. This could be most any other place east of Egypt and, you know, west of Pakistan, you know, anywhere in that Middle Eastern region that they hear so much about.
Yeah. So I guess before we start talking about this movie, Patrick, please tell us what, if anything, is in a title, because it looks like it's about the same everywhere.
So Monsters and the subtitle Dark Continent is the original title, as well as what it went under most places. I think Monsters, the first film, did have some play in other countries, and the sequel here was similarly titled Poland. It was Zone X was the first film, which makes
not
me think a lot
bad.
Of District 9 and a few other titles. But Zone X 2 was the title of this movie. And similarly in Taiwan, it was Alien War Zone. I think both the first movie and this one was Alien War Zone Dark Continent. Yeah, a few other kind of similar titles. For a while, it was just known as Monsters 2. The Dark Continent subtitle, I don't enjoy because, first of all, the Middle East isn't a continent. The Middle East is a subcontinent.
It's not great. It reeks of, let's
part
just
of
say,
darkness. Oh, it's
colonialism.
Yeah, it's such a mysterious continent. It's dark to us.
It's a real terrible title, matching the quality of everything else in this picture.
I'm getting the sense you didn't like this movie.
Oh, bro, we'll open this can of mustard. A can of mustard? That's not a thing.
A bottle, you'll have a jar. I don't think I've ever seen a can of mustard. But hey, you know what? I'll cut that out of this part of the episode, and we'll start that business together.
yeah, exactly.
Pop open a fresh
Kaiju versus mustard
serrated top of mustard. Dip your hot dog. Yeah. So whether this is Afghanistan or Iraq, obviously in 2015, this is pretty late for this kind of,
it's really late for this kind of movie.
Yeah. I mean, we're into the second Obama administration here. We're getting towards the end of the second Obama administration. And like, I understand these kind of movies, I guess, can potentially sell tickets. Like, I mean, I saw Jarhead in theater. I love Jarhead. I think that's a great movie.
So that's the thing, is like, at first I thought this movie was supposed to be a little satirical and self-aware, and this movie lets you know real quick that ain't the case.
No.
It's extremely self-serious, and like, so we open up with this like, group of guys who are about to be shipped off to their first tour. And it's almost the standard, like, I mean, if you ever saw the MTV produced Stop Loss, that's what this movie kind of seems to aspire to be, without any of the proposed and misguided nuance that film had. And you also don't have anyone as charismatic as Joseph Gordon-Levitt or Channing Tatum. You have a bunch of just typical, I don't want to say jarhead, but a typical just like,
I mean, yeah, they're
dipstick dudes who basically they feel like someone's writing these characters as if the Fast and the Furious franchise is the only thing they've ever seen.
Yeah, I believe that. And yeah, boy, howdy. We get a lot of them.
They cram a lot in like till the first 5 minutes. Like, we find out that one is just becoming a father. One
like,
guy
literally.
Like,
and they're the day before he gets deployed.
Yeah, and then they're like he delivers it, and it's like, all right, dude, let's go. Like, where y'all going? Oh, we're just going to chill. I'm like, I'm sorry, what is happening right now?
Yeah, we gonna kick it, It's like, today, really? Like, right now? She's like holding her baby that's still wet from the water bath, which is like, I didn't need to see that either. There's also just like a ton of sex, drugs, and
rock and roll
and partying here in this.
Oh yeah, I mean, like this is. I can tell that like they thought, oh, we want to create characters that your standard mainstream Americans, that they want to be those guys. Like this movie is certainly written for the people that do exist that think American Sniper is the greatest film of all time, because I think that's the only people that enjoy this movie.
I'm confused by it. And it's so funny because I myself personally love war movies kind of in general. The last Middle Eastern war movie I saw was, gosh, now I can't remember it. I think Danny Boyle just did one.
Danny Boyle?
I think, yeah.
It wasn't a World War II film, was it?
No, maybe I'm thinking of another.
I think you might be thinking of like Christopher Nolan did Dunkirk. No, but yeah, the last thing Danny Boyle did before year's 28 years later is Yesterday.
It was Guy Ritchie's The Covenant.
Oh, the one with Captain America? Or no,
it's
Chris
literally
Pine.
Guy Ritchie's apostrophe, S, The Covenant is how it was.
No. Oh, yeah, no, I remember. It is Chris Pine, right?
Jake Gyllenhaal. And it's about, an interpreter. And I think that's what the original title is going to be.
Yeah. I do remember that one being awkwardly in theaters and doing nothing. So fun fact about me, I don't know if this has come up a lot in this particular podcast. I don't like war movies, and I typically actively avoid them. Now, I've certainly seen a lot of the big ones. I do understand some of the artistic merit of your Apocalypse Nows and your Saving Private Ryans. And there are some films I have liked that are kind of like less about the war and more about what the war means or certain situations in the war, like Any of the Gates. But I don't go out and seek every single, like, you know, Platoon and Full Metal Jacket. And I understand that those movies have, again, merit, but I actively don't seek them out. I've not seen The Hurt Locker. I've not seen Black Hawk Down. They're not movies I'm interested in seeing.
Down's so good.
And I understand that. I'm not saying that they're not good. They are just are something that have never really been of interest to me. Even though a lot of times when I do see the movie, I will say, yes, this is a great film. I don't know if I ever need to see this again.
The beginning of this movie reminded me a great deal of Deer Hunter, The Deer Hunter, which is about Vietnam. That's a
very kind comparison.
Well,
stop loss was where exactly where I put this, and that's where it deserved to be.
It shows all the characters in the U.S. before they're deployed. That's really where the comparisons end, because it is definitely not as artistic movie.
There is no Christopher Walken saving this movie. Now, had there been... would still been a terrible movie, but
can you imagine? Yeah, I'm not really familiar with almost any of the actors in this.
I am familiar with one of the actors.
Sam Keeley?
No. The only actor I am familiar with is, I don't even think her name is actually said in the film.
Right.
Aura. But Sophia Boutella as Aura. Mm. She's been in Star Trek Beyond. She is the titular mummy in The Mummy, the Tom Cruise film, and she's also in the recent Zack Snyder Rebel Moon films.
Yeah, and she's pretty good in those.
Anytime I've seen her, she's been really good. Even she's the one good actor in this movie.
Yeah, they don't give her a lot
anything to do.
Yeah, our main characters are, looks like, a mix of British and Irish actors for the most part, plain Americans, which is like, you know, like the British were in the Middle East as well. Like, they were in Iraq and Afghanistan too. Like, you could have easily made this about...
She's been in better sci-fi. She's in Hotel Artemis, and that movie's great.
Oh, man, I think I started that movie.
And I think she knew probably because of Star Trek Beyond, because she's Jayla, the alien, the main alien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's great. And, like, I honestly, one of my favorite characters that Kelvin Universe introduced. She's in that the one documentary I have not brought myself to see, Love Antosha, the documentary about Anton Yelchin.
Aww.
Because, yeah, I was like, I have not been in that spot yet. But she's the only actor that I actively recognized. I know that
she was also in Prisoners of the Ghostland, which it relates to next week's movie.
Well, I did recognize Joe Dempsey from Doctor Who and Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he played
Skins. He's Kristen Skins.
Yeah, he played Gendry Baratheon in that movie. Yeah, so is he our main character,
Frankie,
in this movie?
No, Michael is.
Yeah, they're hard for me to tell apart in time.
They all get normal names, and they're kind of barely mentioned. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, they start dying pretty quickly. Spoiler warnings for this film.
Well, there is that, but so. Yeah, you have these knucklehead dudes who, you know, run around town and party and then leave, and then immediately meet, like, who I just kept calling, like, freaking Wish or Timmy John Moxley, because he reminded me vaguely of John Moxley from All Elite Wrestling, but like with zero, none of the chemistry. I can't remember who plays the sergeant. Is it Sergeant? Nick? Is that? Yeah. I think that's him.
We're dancing around this cast so much because we don't want to talk about the actual movie in depth.
I mean, we can go into it. So let's get this out of the way. This is not a kaiju film. This is someone who had a war movie they wanted to do. And they're like, you can do it, but put these monsters in it. And we're going to slap in a tie-in to Monsters, the Gareth Edwards movie. Yeah, because these monsters do not factor in almost at all.
You know, they got the green light for a sequel to this, I think, kind of at the same time that Gareth Edwards was given the reins to Godzilla, to Legendary's Godzilla. So this is probably, you know, 3 years prior to when this movie came out.
Oh, so the guy we were talking about is Johnny Harris. Nicholas Pinnock was Sergeant Forrester.
Oh, okay. Yes, he's like the other main character here. Tom Green wrote the screenplay with author Jay Bass. It's hard to say. Jay Bass.
I know. Like every single time I was like, I wish Tom Green wrote the screenplay.
And this was produced, I'm not sure if executive produced, and had Gareth Edwards somewhere in kind of the pre-production schedule, but they were given carte blanche to write the movie that they wanted to write, so long as it included monsters. And so what we ended up with was, definitely something that relies more heavily on war kind of ethics and things like that, well, with the monsters as a background. But
that's the thing, is like, this movie is like, it feels like it does so many mental gymnastics. It's like, this is why we're in the Middle East. And so we can tell this story, this generic story that really like has very little to do with the monsters, except for like two real scenes in this film. And
somehow they're in the movie more, but are less of an impact than the first movie, where we really
are background them and that's it.
And to be honest, they look amazing.
Incredible. That's what makes this movie so much more frustrating, is the monsters look phenomenal. Like they look really, really good. And the designs are interesting. Like, I really wish that we had gotten a movie about these monsters. And this movie even implies something really interesting about them, like affecting the Earth. And boy, howdy, would I have loved some, you know, some more of that. You know, let's expand upon that, and not which one of these jackholes is roaming around the desert terrorizing brown people, like, which is what they are doing almost the entire movie.
Yeah, pretty much. And then it gets even more extreme towards the end. Yeah, it's very much a straight up war movie until they get captured about halfway through. And then it becomes very much like Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, where it's kind of like a survival movie, behind enemy lines style movie. And alien monsters are there sometimes, but they do not seem very interested in the goings-on of the
movie. And no one else is concerned about them except for the U.S. military.
Which, you know, is kind of...
Which makes you think.
it is something that carries over from the first movie where, you know...
They do call it the IZ.
Yeah, well, they're putting up the giant walls with Mexico, and they're the ones that are dropping, like, the defoliant and the poisonous gas from the sky. Here we're getting like full bomber strafing runs, taking out the creatures, which seem to be very easily killed by conventional means. In the first movie, it seemed like it was not that.
Yeah, these morons with their typical infantry firearms are able to take out a gigantic kaiju.
Yeah, one of them has like a shotgun. He's like shooting up in the air at, you know, a 200-foot tall creature.
Yeah, it's very large. They kill it as they're terrorizing a farmer there, and it's just, it's really tough for me to like even talk about this movie without cringing. This movie is very cringeworthy.
The one part that really did me in was like the weird lion shaped monsters that were like running beside.
The ones that are kind of like do you remember in Tremors 2 where the graboids have like the land versions? That's what they reminded me of, or the thing from the Relic.
It's every alien monster design from the mid 2010s. It feels like, because the same kind of like weird tentacle four legged creatures, I think, were in Edge of Tomorrow and like a ton of other movies. They actually look like Akatas from Starfinder.
You also look like Akatas for sure.
But it's like the design, it just didn't make any sense with everything we've seen of the other monsters in the movie. It's like, what is going on here? And then those things don't come back at all. They're not really talked about after that sequence. They hit one with a vehicle, and then that's kind of it. There's just two of them there as well. But obviously, the main thing that the series is known for are the huge kaiju, which we do get a cool intro sequence for when they first go on patrol in like helicopters. And besides the shooting of the one, they really only come back in the last third of the movie. And the other new thing we get added in to the Monsters universe is like a mile long kaiju at the very end of the film that is hinted at that they're releasing their spores into the ground. And it's like, maybe it's growing this thing. It looks very cool for the 60 seconds it's on screen, but then we don't get any more of it. That's the end of the movie, basically.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's so deflating because it's like, oh, the one interesting thing I have seen so far, and roll credits. Cool. Thanks for that. Thanks for making a movie about the guys in Fahrenheit 9/11 who had Disturbed in their helmets playing for that entire 5-minute sequence. You know what I'm talking about? In Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, there's a scene where they focus on some soldiers in Iraq, and they talk about how they have like CDs they can play in their helmets, and they're playing Disturbed the entire time while they're like going into action.
That's the other thing. That's one of the reasons I love Jarheads, is because it shows you very much, I think, you know, an actual kind of combat situation, which is just a bunch of wannabe frat guys who are bored like 99% of the time.
But the writing of Jarhead is at least aware, at least the first film. There's three Jarhead movies. Well, only one of them had a theatrical release.
Well, that's the other thing. The actual soldiers in Warzone are actually pretty happy and like not violent with one another. This movie just goes into so many tropes of like, oh, they're all amped up and they're ready to kill. And it's like, nah, that's not what the situation ground. Like, that's not tenable for we were in Afghanistan for like 20 years, you know,
obviously there were some people who, I mean, Jarhead's based on an actual book. So there is some nuance in that film. And there is some, I think the film itself, at least from what I remember, it's been a long time since I've watched it, but it does seem to be trying to say something about the state of mind of the people who had to go over there and kind of explain in the same way that some Vietnam movies have explained, you know, what really happened mentally to some of these soldiers, and not to like a hyperbolic degree, like, you know, Apocalypse Now, but something that was like a little more grounded, where it's like, this is what people went through. And it really psychologically, you know, scarred them. And
this movie feels definitely like the writers watched a lot of war movies, but did not have really something new to say about
what's also really frustrating is they had nothing nuanced to say. They basically copy and paste a situation and wrote stock characters. And when you're dealing with something on the socio-geopolitical plane that this movie is attempting to, and you have nothing to say, and you just write a bunch of like, you know, rental video store quality, like direct-to-video movie dialogue and characters and just shove them into this situation that really requires nuance. If you do this thing straight, it just looks and comes off as this weird, you know, pandering to the wrong type of patriotic nonsense that without nuance is like, oh no, this is why we are in Iraq and we deserve to be here. We need to be here. And that movie doesn't seem to have anything to say other than that. And even this movie, it's like, oh no, we're the good guys because the monsters are here and we've got to find them and we've got to raise them out. And then also, as a result, because the United States is very, very uncareful in what they're carpet bombing, a couple of insurgent groups have risen up because, hey, stop killing our civilians. Jesus, saw something super familiar. Yeah.
Well, and you know,
it's this kind of like really bad rip from the headline stuff that doesn't understand anything that's going on. It's just replicating headlines, and it makes it honestly pretty offensive.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as offensive, because I am absolutely certain there's like much worse kind of hoorah, you know.
There absolutely is, but I think ignorance is just as bad.
But this movie had the chance to, I mean, do what the first movie did, which is like, oh, humans are the monsters. Like, that was the monsters are how we treat one another.
And this movie even has a whole ripoff of Heart of Darkness crap. And they still don't get to that conclusion.
Yeah, they still really don't get there. It is still kind of lackluster in the themes department. And it's such a shame, because they did have a higher budget compared to the first movie. I mean, not like a ton, but it is quoted online as $500,000. And I mean, unlike the first movie, the which recouped that much money and made a ton more, this movie took in about, Wikipedia says, about $50,000 from its theatrical run and DVD sales. And it's like, how many theaters was this in? Did it go anywhere?
Probably just one or two. Because I mean, I remember when this movie came out, I was even telling people I was watching this movie, and they're like, there's a sequel to Monsters? Like, this movie was horribly, horribly marketed. And I think probably because they knew what movie they had.
It did, I think, probably the best in the UK, where I feel like some of these actors are a little better known. But yeah, it's kind of a death knell when you're trying to make a little bigger budget sci-fi action film, and people don't know the director, people don't know really any of these actors. Like, was even Game of Thrones? I guess Game of Thrones had just kind of started.
It probably just right? started, which means I don't think Gendry was even there.
I was about to say, like, what actors?
Now that this? Said, British people would absolutely recognize him because he was he's from Skins and Doctor Who.
Yeah, Game of Thrones started in 2011, so he probably would have been at least known from that. But
well, I mean, because you got to think about, like, you know, for especially over there, these shows are extremely massive, and especially mm-hmm. being in Doctor Who, it's like, okay, we know who this actor is. He's worked in a lot of TV. So has Johnny Harris, who plays Freighter, who is like the surviving staff sergeant, and I mean. Apparently works a lot in the UK. Like, he's been nominated for BAFTAs for, and I think this also just goes to show, like, no matter how well you're acting, because you can tell he's trying to act, but he's acting to terrible dialogue and terrible scenes. So it makes him just look just absolutely insane. But this guy gets a lot of work in the UK. If you look at his kind of CV, like he's popped up in a lot of big mini series and a lot of specials. Recently in Great Expectations and A Gentleman in Moscow, like both well-received series.
I think all the actors honestly do a fine job, even though they're...
It's tough to judge them for their performances based on how bad their writing is. Some of these kids couldn't act, but also, who colored this movie? This movie looks like it came from like a 2007 Saw film. Like, the color is awful.
Every time we either go to Mexico or the Middle East, it gets
just wash out the movie
color corrected into the dingiest place possible. But the actors, I think they do with the script what they can. Movie got absolutely panned by critics when it came out, like a 20% or so on Rotten Tomatoes. IMDb, it's a little as an audience score, a little less harsh. It's 42 on their meta score there out of 100, 42 out of 100. Yeah, and the thing is, this is the final nail in the head as far as this series goes. There's nothing else in this same universe. Obviously, Gareth Edwards has moved on to bigger and better things. He's, as we talked about in our Godzilla review, about to take on the Jurassic Park series.
Yeah, and he did Rogue One.
Did The Creator, which I think is, you know, honestly one of his best kind of...
I still haven't seen it.
Independent-ish IPs. It's pretty cool. It definitely takes a lot from stuff you've seen, but...
It's one I've been meaning to get to, for sure.
It is a very fun kind of cyberpunk-y world. But yeah, I mean, he's made like... three of my favorite movies of all time, with Rogue One, Godzilla, and I put Monsters up there as well.
I mean, I thought it was fine. I'm not going to put it on my favorite movie list, but Godzilla and Rogue One, I can see those.
Yeah, it's high up on kaiju movies, I would say. Definitely independent kaiju movies. If someone was asking for one, it would be up there. But yeah, this is the end of, so far, the Monsters universe, and it's
the nail in the coffin, if you will.
Yeah, it's a shame because it feels like this world as a backdrop from that first movie was so rich, so deep, and this one just didn't really use it that well. Like you said, you just felt like kind of a war movie with that stapled on in the background. Yeah. So what else do we have to do but get to the rating, Miles? I was expecting something very different, though, when I sat down to watch this movie based on these reviews I'd seen online. And so, as someone who does like a good war movie, this is okay to me. I feel like my enjoyment was hampered by the fact that this just lacks all the soul that the first movie had, all like the independent spirit of the first film. You don't get a chance to fall in love with any singular character in this movie. And then they just start dying and you're like, oh, okay. Why did we spend so much time with them? But you don't get a chance to fall in love with this universe again. It's probably a good hour too long for the story they were trying to tell. Maybe the first half hour and the last half hour is important, but I feel like a lot of the stuff that happens in the middle, cut. So yeah, I'm giving it a 5 out of 10.
Wow.
To a 5.5. Well, that's good on our scale. And
It's
almost a good watch. It's not something I would probably watch again, unfortunately. But what about you, Miles? Seems like you're way lower.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely detested this movie. Completely despised it. I have not hated a movie for this podcast in a very, very long time.
Oh, it's due. You're due for
Oh, no. Like the entire time I was just kind of like seething watching this movie with how poorly it's written, how tone deaf it is. And it's not even a kaiju film. Like the monsters, like we've done plenty of movies that are not really kaiju films, but they're at least tangentially interesting or monster movies. This really isn't one. Like if you take out the monster of this movie, you still have the exact same movie. All the monsters are a reason to be in the Middle East, which is one of the horrifically like placed things I've seen in a monster movie so far. I will never ever encourage anyone to see this. I will hopefully never watch this movie again. 1 out of 10. Awful freaking movie.
What about
I hate it.
Technical aspects.
So I'll give it this. The monsters look phenomenal. They are well rendered. They are well designed. They are extremely interesting. They are the only good thing other than, you know, a handful of, you know, the actor's attempt, specifically Sofia Boutella. That's it. But I think this script is, I mean, just piss poor, like complete, absolute dreck. And it takes down the entire movie. The movie's poorly directed. Like I said, the real Tom Green would have done a better job. I am at least going to give it credit for the monster designs and how good they look. So I am giving it a soft 4.
Soft 4, not a hard 4. I am a little less harsh on the technical aspects because the movie does look good. It is well acted. And like you said, you know, the first movie, Gareth Edwards literally made the effects like in his basement. He just locked himself in, did the CGI himself. And the CGI here in this movie is great. But yeah, like you said, it doesn't really serve a purpose. Like I would rather not see the monsters and have like big reveals than what they did with them, which is kind of make them window dressing in some scenes, skyboxes in a video game, if you will.
Yeah.
But yeah, comparing it to the first film, they did so much more with less than the more CGI that they had to do less with here, if that makes sense. I'm giving it a 6 out of 10 for its technical and dropping my importance score down to a 5 out of 10. I think this movie flopped, rightly so, but I do think kaiju fans should give it a try. Not a great kaiju movie in any sense of the word, but does somewhat continue the conceptual universe through heavy-handed metaphor, if you will, of the first movie. I think if you like the first movie a lot, this one is at least worth checking out. It is going to make you angry if you love the first movie and to watch, like, you know, them basically squander the ideas. But yeah, at the very least, kaiju in the Middle East, not something that's ever been done before or since. Miles, has there been a kaiju in the Middle East movie?
I'm not sure.
I think there.
I know we haven't covered really any, but also some of the films from the area can be difficult to obtain. But I don't know.
To my knowledge,
we haven't gotten any, but
feels like
at least not Daikaiju. I think there are creature movies and stuff like that, and things about Jin and because I've seen a couple of those. It's mostly Indian film and French films, but I don't think I've seen anything from there. But also, you know, you're talking about an oppressed people who often don't get the option to make art in a free space.
there are also there's many a countries in the Middle East. It's a very large area. They're not all oppressed, but
not all of them. But we've certainly helped plenty become oppressed.
Yeah, we've helped other oppressors.
Yeah, that's really oppressed. What I'm talking about. Like, it's just yeah.
But I think
so. What's your score for the evocative?
Its importance as a kaiju movie is a 5. I don't think if you come across this movie as an option to pay to watch it, you should go out of your way. But if you can find it for free online, or if it's just playing somewhere, there are certain scenes that you will want to at least watch on YouTube, if that makes sense. But yeah, whew, boy, 2 hours too. It definitely, definitely filled up those 2 hours with not a lot. Miles, what about you for its importance?
Oh, I couldn't disagree more. This is straight trash. No one should ever watch it. If you want some, you know, American Pride crap shoved down your throat in this day and age, sure, go ahead. But it's very, very bad. It has none of the nuance of any good war movie, and it really has nothing to do with kaiju. I mean, they're there. That's it. They're a nice background. But then, this movie doesn't take any decent kaiju tropes. It doesn't offer anything to the genre. It's, yeah, there's like one scene that's mildly interesting that they do nothing with. Avoid this movie at all costs. If you see it, just bury it in the sand. 2 out of 10.
And cross the other side of the street.
I absolutely despise this film.
Oh, well, it doesn't sound like you hate it too much. You're at a 3 out of.
Yeah, it's only gotten that high because the monsters looked good.
No, I can't do math. Sorry. You're at a 2 out of 10.
Yeah, that sounds more correct.
And I'm at a 5 out of 10.
And I'm only at a 2 because the monsters look good. It's the only credit I really give it.
Which brings our podcast final to a 4 out of 10.
It's way too high.
It's a 3.8. So it's kind of
I understand that it is a 4. I just you just ruined the metric with your scores.
Well, I mean, we're right on the money as a unit as far as IMDb scores go. You know, I didn't even look up what it is on Letterboxd. Letterboxd is,
I think, like 2 point something.
My
stars.
Favorite. Okay, so that would be an equivalent.
I think it's 2.1 maybe.
Yeah, but we're right kind of in that same neighborhood. Final 4 out of 10, Miles. Thanks for watching this one with me.
Don't even thank me for this.
There's not a Monsters 3. Don't thank me for my service. Monsters 3, we liberate other countries.
I don't even hold it against the franchise because there's no real franchise to be, you know, held against. This is a cash grab opportunity. I understand that they were trying to make a Monsters movie happen, but this ain't it, fam. Avoid at all cost.
You know what would've been fun if they had made a movie that was
good
in the United States and was from the actual perspective of the soldiers that
honestly saved that's them what they were the really end. Setting up was like, oh, yeah. Because Detroit, here's the thing. Their I think dark joke is that like you can't tell whether or not Detroit's been attacked by monsters or not.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not great.
Loved if they had continued in the US or Mexico and we'd gotten to see that side of the world some more, but
Just a good screenwriter, please.
Yes.
Or not even good. Adequate. Adequate would be fine.
Yeah. So brings down the the series total for the Monsters universe.
I don't even count this as part of
it. We gave an 8 out of 10 too, which is, you know, I think pretty high.
Yeah,
but that'll do it for us. You can find us on social medias at Kaiju Versus History. KaijuVersusHistory.com is our website, our letterbox, we're Kaiju Versus History. You can email us at KaijuVersusHistory@gmail.com. Rate, review our show. Find our online Discord presence on the Cosmic Crit Discord channel. We have a sub Discord channel that is all about kaiju nudes and talking about the episodes. And yeah, we have our
kaiju nudes.
Oh, if you must, yes. that's in the.
I'm sorry, that's what I thought you said. I was like,
news,
okay.
News, and other stuff.
I just can't hear today.
Check out our Letterboxd for our scores in 5-star format for all the movies that we watch here. Miles, what are we doing next week? I gave a little hint earlier in the episode.
Well, I'm trying to find something to replace Thank you. I acknowledge you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners, for coming on this journey with us. But we're going to catch you next time when we look at a small kaiju-adjacent Japanese film about stardom and a giant turtle. No, this is not Gamera, but a fun little side project I would wager many fans haven't heard of. That's right. Tune in next week for History versus Love and Peace.